All right, this morning we're continuing on the study in Ecclesiastes, and we're in chapter 2. We're going to take a few seconds just to kind of review and talk about where we're at with the book of Ecclesiastes. The proclaimer, the preacher that's going to proclaim these words of instruction is one who's proclaiming it to an assembly, and he's not just one who's talking from some kind of a position of law or from the prophets, but he's talking as one who has experience. He's one who's well qualified in his craft, you might say. If you were going to find someone who knew how to sew or knew how to build a house or knew how to do something, had some expertise in, you would go to that person because they were skilled in what they did. And so the one who is proclaiming this in Ecclesiastes is one who's had experience. It's not just wisdom, but it's practical experience, and so he's going to talk about that. In the world, we see that this life under the sun is what we're all under. We're all under the same game, the same scenario in life that have occurred and have confronted the people in the past are the ones that are confronting us. They're going to confront our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, if the world lasts that long. The magazine Life, which actually started in 1883, its original motto was, where there is life, there is hope. And so that's an interesting statement, because in the book of Ecclesiastes, the question is going to come up, well, what is the hope that we have? What really do we hang our whole existence on? And the argument, the discussion, and what the preacher is proclaiming is, I'm going to explore all of that. I'm going to take a look at all of that. I have the ability to do that, as we see in Solomon, to accomplish these tasks that maybe myself, Kevin, can't necessarily accomplish, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to go down every trail that I can go down to find out what is the answer. What is the reason for life, is what he's going to look at. Now, before we get into that, I wanted to talk a little bit about some other things that was on your outline. And you may probably have noticed on some of my slides here over the last couple of weeks, and we didn't really address it last week, but I'd given you a handout, and on that handout there was a list of all the verses in Ecclesiastes, and there were these letters, A, T, and P, and maybe you've been doing that. I'm going to encourage you to do that. There won't be a test at the end of this particular series, but I'm going to encourage you to take a look at this, look at how we label these particular verses. And what I've suggested is that there are some verses that specifically address and give us some clues as to the author of the book of Ecclesiastes. And so I've used the letter A. And so in my outline, you'll see up above, I'll have those darkened end in yellow. And I'm encouraging you to circle those on your piece of paper, because there are some who would question whether Solomon did write the book of Ecclesiastes. And there are definitely passages that suggest and direct us to the fact that he was probably the author and the originator of these particular words. So we use the letter A in that case. Then up here we have the letter T. Now all of these verses should eventually have, you should have circled or marked that they are truth, because this is God's word, and God's word is true. And so each of these verses, statements that are made, have truth in them. And so eventually, you should have everything marked T. But there could be a situation where there's P, which is this idea of pondering. And the book of Ecclesiastes does suggest that the preacher, the proclaimer of these things, pondered these things. It wasn't just a casual, I'll think about it for a few minutes and let it go. This were things about pondering. So, got this letter P, which means I might ponder it during my class, but maybe I want to go back and I want to think about this. I want to ponder this particular statement or series of statements in such a way that will make them more active and more living for me as I look at them. So I encourage you to take a look at that as we go through the study. You'll see the ones that I have marked up here. I've tried to make sure, as I've copied and pasted and done the slideshows, that I put them in the right order. But you don't have to copy my answers. It's just a reference for us to think about these things. So some other things we want to be mindful of in this particular chapter and also in this book: the words vanity and vexation of spirit combination are used about 37 times in this short 12-chapter book. In the rest of the Bible, these terms are used about 33 times. So you can see there is a large percentage of times that this particular word and words are used here by the author. So we should be familiar with them, and we're not going to stop each time and go through that. But let's just remember that this idea of vanity is emptiness. There's emptiness in whatever the author is describing there. They're transitory. They're not going to last very long. They're just here and they're gone. And this idea that they are unsatisfactory. The things that are described as he goes through and talks about them at the end of the day, they're unsatisfactory, they're empty, they're transitory, they're not going to last. And he's looking for something that lasts. What makes sense about this life? Now, this is really an important question because I think as we talk to people in the world, really what's come to light for me in this book is that I wouldn't think about starting with the book of Ecclesiastes in talking to somebody about God. I'd go to Mark or I'd go to Acts or I'd start somewhere there to talk about. But this is really a great book to start talking about the fundamental problem that all of us have as humans. And because all of us, if you talk to people and if you've experienced it in your own life, this book describes the human condition. And it puts us to a question of where do I go? What do I do? What's my hope? And so this is a great book and it answers some of these questions that are in place. So this idea of vexation, it's a constant but unsatisfied seeking after something. It's sadness. So we talk about vexation of spirit, we see about sadness, it's unsatisfactory. And we have these two combinations brought together. It really makes you feel it, doesn't it? When you read it, you feel it. And that's exactly what the author wants us to do. That's exactly what the proclaimer wants us to do, is he wants us to feel it because he felt it. Here's a man who had, you could say, everything. And we've talked about that before, his land, his wealth, and he's going to go through that again. He had everything that he could possibly hope for. There was nothing that he could hold back from himself. He had it. And he's going to take that benefit, that blessing, to actually go through and to examine these things that are in place. So he said here in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, if you want to follow along, and I'm using the King James Version. You may have other versions with you, but we're going to be looking through these verses together this morning. He said, I said in my heart, important. Because what he did is he said, you know, I'm going to do something. And maybe you have felt that, or if you think about it, you have done that before. And my little illustration about this goes something like this. I was in fifth grade. I was laying in bed. Actually, I told my dad this story here last week. I was laying in bed. I was in fifth grade. And I thought, you know, my life is really boring. I have a boring life. And I decided, I said to my heart, I'm going to remember the things that happened to me in my life, and I'm going to tell them as stories so my life won't be boring. Okay? Little simple illustration, but I remember saying that to myself. This is what I'm going to do. Okay? We've probably all had those moments. And so Solomon says to himself, I said to my heart, what am I going to do? I'm going to go now. I'm going to explore this question. And so all these different rabbit trails, all these different ways of trying to explain the question about life, I'm going to explore. So all these different roads. And we may say, well, we've explored some road or some other road, but he's going to explore them all. He said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to accomplish this goal. He's going to be determined in what he's going to do. And so what's he going to do then here? He's going to prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. That's what he's going to do. Anything that's gladness, anything that's pleasure, I'm going to try that road. I'm going to see where that takes me. I'm going to see if somewhere down that road there is something that answers this question. And I think we could all say to either ourselves or people that we've seen or known that there are people who are trying that road and they do it all their life. Okay? Now, with him, he's going to have this idea. Now, he says here that then what is the result of it? Behold, all this was going to be vanity. Okay? So the end of this game is going to take me to this. But it wasn't just a casual, I don't believe it was a casual mental thing he went through. He actually did these things. Okay? And so we're going to look at what those things may have involved. And he's not going to list necessarily everything, but he's going to bring us down that trail. So I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what does it do? So if I take gladness and I take laughter and I'm just going to be jovial about everything and I'm going to be just everything is glad and everything's happy, the reality is that it doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't keep me out of the problems of life. The issues of life just don't disappear because I'm happy all the time or I'm telling a joke all the time or I'm just giddy all the time. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't accomplish anything at the end of the game. So you still have all of these things that are in place. It doesn't answer the question. So I saw it in my heart. So again, he's going to seek back in his heart. He's going to say, okay, so now what do I do? How am I going to do this? So he says, well, I'm going to go down this other trail. I'm going to give myself, it says, I give myself to wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom. So he's going to take this idea of pleasure and this idea of a good time. I'm just going to have a good time. But, he says, I'm also in a little bit different spot in the fact that I still have wisdom with me. So he's doing this from a perspective that because he's been granted wisdom from God, he's got a little bit of advantage, I'll say to you, on us than that, because he was able to keep his mind together, okay? Even though he was going down this pleasure trail, there was still this wisdom behind him that says, you know, I'm doing this, but I'm doing it for a reason, if that kind of makes sense. You know, he's still got his wisdom with him, which, you know, we don't necessarily have that advantage because we don't necessarily take wisdom everywhere we go, okay? And so he says he's going to look down this this with wisdom. And he said, I'm going to lay hold on folly. Wow, lay hold of folly. So he's going to take folly and he's going to grab it, he's going to hold on to it, and he's going to explore every part of folly. And we go, oh boy, you know, we don't want to go down folly, right? Because what does folly look like? Well, folly is to act stupidly, right? We really don't want to act stupidly. It's absurdly, things that are absurd, inconsistency, infatuated with fools or foolishness, drunkenness, thick-headedness. Those are things we just, you know, we want to steer away from. And part of the reason why we want to steer away from that is because those who have wisdom have said, this is what you don't want to do. Okay? And Solomon's going to say, this is not what you want to do. And partly, sometimes, it's because some of us have been some of those things. And, you know, we may just pass that on to our sons and daughters and say, don't be stupid and don't ask me why I know not to be stupid. Okay? So this idea, then, of folly is also things that denotes a deviation of mind from things which are true. So when you think about this, to go down this trail, Solomon had to almost put away things that were true. He had to know something was wrong and to not do it, even though he knew something was true. To know that the path, absence of truth, wasn't the right path to go, it would seem. Things that were good. So maybe there was something that was he knew was good, wisdom told him it was good, and he explored the fact that that thing wasn't, he took it out of his mind. Because that's what folly is. Things that are right. He eliminated that something was right. He went down these trails, and it's kind of hard to imagine how you go down that trail in a physical way or a mental way or a spiritual way. He went down that trail, and he said, no, it's not right. Those things that are wise. But you know what? We've all done that. We all have. So we've been foolish, right? And just as Solomon did, hopefully we understood that at some point we were in folly. That's the human condition. That's life. That's how we all are. That's how everyone has fought that game. This idea of things that are not prudent. So he went down these trails. He went down these trails and he said, they might see that what is good for the sons of men. So he wanted to find out. Okay, so is there something down one of these trails that we don't understand, or that maybe is really the right answer? He said that he wants to find out, which is they do under the sun all the days of their life. So there's some other way that a man can go that has to do with the things of this earth and our work under the sun. Is this where we need to be? So, he said he made himself great works. We know that Solomon had the wealth to do whatever he wanted to do. He didn't have wars. He didn't have things that were getting in his way. He didn't have to worry about food. He didn't have to worry about basically anything. So he worked some great works. He made great works. He made whatever is in his mind to do. Now, did he go out and physically, you know, cut the stone and cut the cedars and cut the planks? No, he didn't. But he made all the plans for it. And if you haven't planned and worked and developed something, or if you have, you know that that takes work. Okay? We can still go to Richard. Richard does a lot of drawing and a lot of planning so somebody can build a structure. Right? How many nails did Richard pound on that building last week? I don't know. Probably none. But there was a lot of work that went into that. Right? To get that to be prepared. So he preparing that. He built houses. So we see the temple that he built. He prepared for his own houses. He built vineyards. He made gardens and orchards. Now, we're not talking about, you know, maybe a one-acre scenario. We saw about all the meat that was required on his table, and I made a joke about the fact there were no vegetables listed there. Well, here we go. He made gardens, so there must have been vegetables, okay, that were in place. And these may have been flower gardens, whatever it was, and orchards. He planted trees in all of them of all kinds that he put in place. I made pools of water to water the wood that brought forth trees. So he built reservoirs to water trees that he wanted to have planted, whatever it was that he chose to have. So he got him servants. He had maidens, had servants born into my house. So this idea of servants born into his house is, let's just, you know, we talk about slavery, but here's the scenario. He purchased so many slaves, and there was an increase of slaves that, let's put it this way, it didn't cost him a lot of money, right? He had increase from his slaves. There were many. He had great possessions of cattle above all those people who had been before him. You know, cattle, camels, beasts of burden, those were all, gave you wealth. See about Job and his animals he had. That was wealth. It wasn't necessarily dollars in the bank, it was the possessions that he had. So he gathered himself silver and gold and peculiar treasures of kings and other provinces. So he had peculiar things that, you know, it's not really in the treasury, it's just a, let's say a knick-knack, and maybe it's a real expensive knick-knack that he's got on his table out there in his foyer for his mansion. And it's just a thing. He just collects them because he can collect them. It doesn't really maybe mean anything. He just collects peculiar things because he's the king and he has great wealth. He gets some men singers and women singers, the lights of the sons of men, musical instruments and all sorts. So he has Pandora before Pandora was Pandora, right? And we were down at St. Augustine here a few years ago, and one of the luxury hotels that was built down there at one time, and up in the rafters of the facility were orchestra. I guess they weren't pits because they were up, but they're orchestra areas. And it impressed me that the music always played. So there was this group would play, and they would play for 3 or 4 hours. And then just before they would quit, this group would play. So there was constantly music going on. And when I read that, I went, ah, there's Solomon. These weren't just occasional come in on Friday night and sing for an hour. This was, you could just see all the time. Maybe wherever he went, he could do that. He had the ability to accomplish that. So I was great. So he said, okay, here's my resume. Here's what I had. How about you? Right? How about you? I was great, and I increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. So, his wisdom remained with him. How? Was it because of him? God said, I'm going to give you wisdom, more than anyone else. And he did. So God gave him this wisdom. It wasn't just something he sat down necessarily and read. I believe that he was born older, okay, we might say. I think he had some maturity about it. But this wisdom that he had was from God. And it was still with him, even though he had all these great things. And the purpose for that was so he can instruct us in the questions that we're going to be delving into more. And so he says, whatever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. So, you know, you may have a desire, you may have something that you would like to possess or to do or to go or something, and you just can't do it because financial or physical or whatever it is. Or maybe you don't want to. No, don't want to do that. Like we said here, he's under the direction of he's going and getting whatever it is. He's going down every trail. And so anything that he saw that he thought, I'm going to explore that spot or I'm going to do that, he did. Nothing was held back from him. I held not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. This was the portion under of all my sons. So he had rejoicing over his labor. Then he said he looked. So he's pondered, he's given his heart to consideration of things. And then here in verse 11 he says, then I looked. So he stopped and he looked at all this great things that he had. He considered all the buildings, the orchards. One of them I think I skipped over was these parks were almost like a hunting ground where they would bring in all these special animals. And they built walls around there and then they would shoot the animals from the wall. You know, it was kind of a safari that they built for them. And all these things, all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all of it's empty. There's nothing there. There was no profit under the sun. So he looked at all of these things he had done. He looked at all of them and he carefully considered them. And he says, okay, what good is it? You know, he got done building the building and he looked at it and he said, what good is it? There was an emptiness there, wasn't there? It didn't meet a certain requirement. So the question is, what's the requirement? And I turned to myself and behold, wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king? So he says basically, what's my son going to do? I mean, I've done it all. I've built everything he could ever hope for. I've done everything that he could do. So the guy coming after me, what's he going to do? He's going to have nothing to do, right? I've done it all. I've done everything that can be done. I've done it. So the question is, what can you do after the king? Even that which has already been done. So then he saw wisdom. And he's going to compare this idea to wisdom and folly. So then he saw that wisdom exceedeth folly. We talked about what folly was. As far as light exceedeth darkness. I thought about the stars. I mean, they're so far away, and there's so much darkness between me and that star, and yet that star breaks through the darkness, and I can see it, however many billions of miles away it is. How much light, how much darkness it cuts through, that light does. So this idea of wisdom, so he says, this wisdom that I was putting against folly is greater than any of the folly that I could see, that I experienced. And we saw what that folly was. There's wisdom. So what does this wisdom look like? So he says, then the wise man's eyes are in his head. I think most of us have eyes in our heads. Okay. Some of us have, you know, better vision than others, but, you know, our eyes are there. And then he compares this to the fool walketh in darkness. Well, you know, the fool has eyes in his head too. But yet he walks in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happens to them all. So there's We both have eyes in our head. One person's walking in wisdom. One more person's walking in darkness. And they both look the same. But there's something different. So he said, okay, so I perceive that then there was some event that happens to everybody. That's something that's common. He said, and then I said to my heart, so here's what he's going to talk about, what he just has found out or realized. It happens, I said to my heart, as it happens to the fool, so it happens even to me. I'm the king. I'm the one who's done everything that can be done. I have all this wisdom. I have all this, everything that I could possibly want, everything that everybody else could possibly want. And the reality is the guy who's over here with eyes in his head just like me, who's walking around in darkness and who's a fool, has the same problem I've got, right? It's going to happen just like to me. And why was I then more wise? Why did I go through all this? Why did I become wise? Why did I do all this when the result is we have the same thing that's going to happen? And this is vanity. So it's emptiness. It's futility that we're in place. For there is no remembrance of the wise man than there is of the fool. So the end of time, you know, the wise guy, the wise man is not remembered, and the fool isn't remembered either. You know, that must be discouraging. You think, I've got all this wisdom, and I realize that someday someone's never going to remember me. Yet I had all this wisdom. Seeing that which is now is the days to come, all shall be forgotten. So we've forgotten people from before, and it's going to happen to me too, and he's going to be forgotten. I'm going to be forgotten, and just like the fool is going to be forgotten, and it's just going to be like that. So why and how dieth the wise man? So how is the wise man going to die? Well, he's going to die just like the fool. So that's not very encouraging, is it? Why go in all this effort and work when the result is all the same? Just as the fool. So he's brought us to a point that says, you know what, now our preacher, our teacher is saying, you know what, he's on the same level as me. Because I can look at him and say, you know, I'm a fool compared to Solomon, right? I don't have anything like Solomon has. And he's not talking to me because he's you know, high-spirited. He thinks he's better than me. What he's done is he's brought himself down to us, to me, and said, I'm just like Kevin, right? Or the fool. He says, therefore I hated life. You can imagine, you know, how disappointing this is to realize that there's no great advantage that I would have over somebody else. And we may see people today in this world that think that they have some better up on somebody else. So he hated life because the work that he's wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. So at the end of the day, the same thing is in place. So then he talks about his labor that he does. So yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken unto the sun, because I should leave it unto a man that shall be after me. So he's going to talk about, okay, so the future, what do I do with these things that I have possessed? And so I think about it today, we would do the same thing in, let's just say, our will. We may have some funds or a house or something that we want to leave to someone after we've left this life. And we would look at that and we would say, well, I want to leave it to someone who's going to, one, maybe appreciate it. So maybe you might have a, a granddaughter or something, and she came over and really enjoyed this one particular doll that you had. I'm making this up as I go, but, you know, you had this doll. And so you go, I'm going to give this to Susie. And so you will that doll to Susie because she will appreciate it. She will take care of it, right? She will appreciate that work. And we may say, well, I have some amount of funds. Maybe I have $100,000. And so I'm going to give that money to someone who's going to use it wisely, right? I'm not going to give it to, let's just say, a son or grandson who's has not handled anything that they've done in their life well. Because I don't want what I've done, what I've worked so hard to get, be squandered, right? So I think we could understand this exactly with what Solomon's question is. I'm going to leave it to somebody else, right? And so his question, and who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? So Solomon answered, he understands that, and we understand that question. You know, all the things that he built and all the things that he did, who's going to have this? Who's going to do anything with this? And then all my labors will be what? For naught, right? I left all these things to someone who didn't care for them. Yet, shall he have rule over all my labor? So the reality is that I'm going to die just like the fool. The person who would inherit it from me, I don't know if they're going to be wise or a fool. But I can't control that because all my labor, all the things that I've done, are going to pass on to someone else. And I don't have any control of that anymore. And so I've done all this work for what? Just for the time I was here. Then I showed myself, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. So I've been wise under the sun. I've done all the right things. I've put everything in motion correctly, and yet I've turned this over to someone who's a fool. But yet I was doing all the right things. So he says, this also is vanity. So I can't turn it over and have any lasting satisfaction, any favorable response, any profit to doing all these things in my life, accomplishing all these things, and turning it over to somebody else because they may squander it. So down that trail, there's no advantage to me. There's no profit for all the work that I've done under the sun, is there? Therefore, I went about to cause my heart to despair at all my labors. So because of what he said, now here he is, the wealthiest man in the world, the wisest man in the world, and he's despairing over all these magnificent things that he's done, that people come all around the world to see all these magnificent things about Solomon, and yet here the man is in his mansion, let's just say, and he's in despair. Because he's trying to answer this question. There is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet, to a man that hath not labored therein, that is, in wisdom, knowledge, and equity, shall he leave it for his portion. So there he is. He's had to leave it to somebody else who hasn't done the things he's done. So this also is vanity and a great evil. For what hath man of all his labors? That's the question. So as we come to the close of chapter 2, we're reiterating really what we've brought up in chapter 1 about trying to answer this question about labor. And as Solomon's working through that particular question. And of vexation of his heart. So there's labor and vexation of heart. These are things that are a question. Wherein he has labored under the sun. So still the question's in place. What is the profit in these kind of things? If I'm going to labor, I'm looking for a profit. If I'm having to deal with vanity and vexation of spirit, is there profit in that somehow? In this labor under the sun? Is there an answer? For all the days are sorrows and his travail of grief. Yea, his heart is taken not rest in the night. This is vanity. So, you know, I think all of us have had sleepless nights, right? And so here this person who is laboring in sorrows, travail and grief, you know, they're not getting much sleep at night. And this also is vanity. There's no, you know, if I worry myself in this life, is there something beyond this life that's going to be a benefit? There's nothing better for a man. So here's a conclusion towards end of chapter 2. It comes to a conclusion. There is nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. this also I saw that is good, that this was from the hand of God. So he says, look, you know, you need to be satisfied really in where you're at. That seems to be the answer. He says, everything's come from God. And so he says, you should eat and drink, that you should make your soul enjoy good in your labor. So enjoy your labor. God gave you labor. So work your job. When you go home at night, I labored today. I did what I needed to do. Enjoy that, because you've been given that. Don't see it as a bad thing. See it as a good thing. For it's been given from the hand of God. So he's looking at labor a little bit different. Labor's an advantage. For who can eat, or who else can hasten thereunto more than I? So he's saying, you know, I had all of these things. I've looked at labor. I've got all these things that are in place. And I look at it and I say that labor has a benefit to me in that I did what God wanted me to do in my labor. That was a profit for me. For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom, knowledge, and joy. So, things come from God's hand and we need to receive them. He says, but to a sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up. So, God's going to give all these things to us. He's going to give the blessings of this life. It's possible that if you take more out of this life and you think this life is the answer to things, what you're going to do, because he's already talked about all the things he's gathered up to make his life more and to be have more advantage, he said, well, the reality is if you heap those things up, what you're going to do is you're going to have travail. You're going to have grief. Okay? And so God's going to give everything good to you. Labor's good. The things that you have are good. But if you decide you're going to heap those things up to somehow give you some advantage, that's going to make you be a sinner. Okay? Because what you're going to do is you're going to eliminate God out of the question. That's where we're going to go with all this. God's out of the question. God gave you everything. You decide you're going to hoard it and become something to yourself. Then you're going to be in this classification of those who sin. So he says, you know, all of these things that we would possess and have, we have this idea of vanity and vexation of spirit. And I didn't do too real good today because our time is just buzzed up, but any quick questions or observations of that chapter? Chapter 2. Richard?